had a couple of opportunities at national gatherings to be in conversation with two different of our key leaders who were leading our national family in this. In each of these, they were just small, private conversations. But in each of these instances, the question came up of like, oh, what if the collaborative model doesn't pass? What if it doesn't get voted in? And each of these two leaders, their response was, that's okay. It's not my role to push something through. We're here to empower and equip our delegates to make a good decision. And then we leave the decision up to them and we honor what decision they make.
Welcome to the Jesus Stories podcast, inspiration for the road ahead. I see and hear that God is up to all kinds of great things among us, through us, and around us. But far too often these stories aren't told. And I think it's time to tell them. Because these Jesus stories have great potential to encourage us and inspire us, forming us to be a people who multiply disciples. This is a podcast of the Ontario Conference of Mennonite Brethren Churches. But whether you're MB or a friend from a different corner of the Church of Jesus, I'm really glad that you're here, and I'm pretty sure these stories can be a blessing to you too. I'm your host, Ryan Yancey. Thanks for joining us. People are meeting Jesus, and it's time to tell these stories. Welcome to Jesus Stories. It's a delight to have you join with us for our ongoing conversation around the book, A Church Called Tove, by Laura Berenger and Scott McKnight. Chapter 8 is entitled Tove Churches Nurture a People-First Culture. I'm thrilled to have with us today Michelle Knowles. Michelle is a pastor of adult ministries at WMB Church in Waterloo. She also shares as our board chair with the Ontario Conference of MB Churches board. And so Michelle and I have had the opportunity to spend quite a bit of time together working through matters over the past year. I'm quite grateful for Michelle's leadership in the last number of years, and so thrilled to have her with us and sharing her perspective on how we can nurture people-first cultures within our individual churches and then across our denomination as well. So thanks a lot for joining us, Michelle. I'm going to invite you to start just by sharing a bit of who you are. What does life look like for Michelle Knowles? How did God lead you to be in the place that you are? And then, second piece I'd love for you to speak to as you kind of survey the ONMB landscape and think about the territory ahead of us. What excites you? So two questions there for you.
Okay, well, thanks, Ryan. It's fun to be here on my first ever podcast. And I love what you're doing with this book and our conference, and it's great to be a part of the conversation. I'm here at WMB Church in Kitchener and Waterloo. I've been at WMB for around 20 years since I was a university student and on staff for just over 13. And right now I oversee a lot of the adult ministries in our church, home groups, work with some of the rest of our team on things around discipleship pathways and programs and courses and a whole mix of things that's quite fun. I'm a part of the preaching team. And I love it. I became a member of WMB when I was baptized here in 2005. And I love this church. And so for me, when God opened the door for me to come on staff, it was just like a dream come true. I get to spend my time, serving our church and working with an incredible team, both the staff and lay leaders in our congregation. And so it's a real joy for me. We live in Kitchener, and my husband, Adam, is also a pastor on our team. He's the pastor of our Kitchener site. And so I love to tell people I'm both a pastor and a pastor's wife, and I love both roles. Most Sundays I'm at our Kitchener site with Adam, and we get to lead the congregation together in our worship services. And that's been a real joy for both of us to serve together. And how did I end up here? Years ago, I was working really closely with Karen West here at WMB, and she was involved in conference work. And I think she saw, some gifts and abilities in me for board work, which was a completely new area. And so she started inviting me into these spaces So she's the one to thank or blame. You can take your pick.
I will thank her. There's no blame. I will thank her.
Appreciate that. But I, you know, for me, it was really natural to say, hey, I'm a part of a church, and it's an MB church, and we're a part of a broader family of churches, you know, provincially and nationally. And for me, it was like, well, why wouldn't I want to be a part of that broader community and support and serve this this family of churches? And so that led me into board work, and I've done a couple rounds on the board now, and it's always an adventure, but it really is a joy. And one of my favorite parts is that through this work, I get to connect with leaders and churches around our province and across Canada, and just see so much more of what God is doing among our churches. And it's really humbling and amazing. So I'm really thankful for that.
Awesome.
What was your second question?
Yeah. Well, before we jump to the second question, Michelle, I should add, invite our listeners to keep their eyes out. I believe it's for the November issue of the MB Herald, and they're going to be featuring a story around Michelle and her journey as a female pastor. So super excited to read that too. It's the November issue. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
I guess.
Good stuff. Yeah. And it really is the case. Like, it has been fun to watch you, hit it at stretch. We're all kind of being stretched and growing in this time that we're in, but you really have hit it out of the park as our board chair, and been a real blessing. So second question, from your chair, from your position as the chair, and as you look at the ONB landscape, what do you see? What excites you about what's ahead for us?
Yeah. Well, you know, like, we've been through some challenging seasons, and you know, and as we've gone through that, like, I think we've experienced God's grace and faithfulness in a lot of different ways. And I'm just really encouraged to see leaders pressing in and see what God's doing among our churches. And I think even conversations like this around this church called Tove book, and wrestling with important questions that we need to be exploring as leaders today, the discipleship conversations that you've been hosting for our leaders, Ryan, and again, spaces for us to come together as leaders and, you know, wrestle with tough questions around our call to live out the gospel and minister to people in our cities and communities around us today, and what that looks like. And so the way I see, you know, leaders pressing in, it's just so encouraging to me. And as we take that posture back to our churches, you know, we're in the midst of a search for an executive director, and we've got a great search and discernment team that's just really dedicated to walking through that. And I know they're in the midst of reviewing applications and, really just discerning candidates and looking for God's call and direction. And we're all excited and eager. Ryan, I know you might be the most eager person in Ontario for this hire to take place, and you know, I gotta say, like, as a board, we've been so grateful for your leadership this past year. It was not an easy place that we asked you to step into, our whole conference has been so deeply blessed by your leadership this past year, and I know you long to be released back to your ministry director role, and there's some things you dream about for our ONB family that you've had to put on hold or slow down in this season. And yet you've done that with grace, and you've just shown so much wisdom and love and patience in this season. And so we're grateful for that. And we're praying for God to bring that right teammate to join you and Christy and to lead us in the next season. And so as we wait in expectation, as we really intentionally pray in this season, I'm also just really encouraged for what God has prepared for us as he guides us in this.
Thanks, Michelle. I appreciate that. That means a lot. And it has been an honor, and I can see God's sovereignty in terms of how he's arranged things for the past year. And it has been a rich experience filling in. And so we invite you as listeners, assume that most of you will have listened within the, you know, couple weeks of when this is released, and we will not have made our hire by that point. And so we invite you to join as you listen today. whatever day it is you listen in, would you join with us in praying for God's leadership in the right hire? So let's jump into our conversation around a church called Tove. And I'm asking every person that I interview in this series, first off, why does this book matter for the Church of Jesus in this time?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And there's two things for me. One is that we need a good vision to call us forward, to lead us into mm-hmm. in this season. You know, as we've been through a lot of tough, messy stuff, you know, some of the examples they press into around leaders in this book and beyond that, and many other challenges, it's easy to get caught up in what not to do or what can't to do or feel defeated before we get started. And so we need a vision to call us forward, and a vision that isn't, you know, a program or a strategy, but a vision of goodness. And so I love that Tove goodness call for us. And and so I think we need to be reminded of that and compelled and allow Jesus to lead us in that direction. And the second thing I love it is that it's oriented around culture, which means it's for all of us. And they unpack culture. I think it's like the very first chapter, and they show the cycle between leaders and congregation. So, for mm-hmm. example, in a churches, and I think that's so important. Again, it's not a program or a strategy. You know, culture isn't something that a board can do through policy or a leader can do through program or teaching, but it involves everyone, and so that means there's an opportunity for everyone. And so whatever your role is in the church as a leader, board member, member of the church, a new congregant, like here's a vision of goodness that has something for everybody to participate in together and that needs everybody to be a part of it and to own this vision and pursue it together. And yeah. So that's really awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate, Michelle, that you've drawn our attention back to that first chapter and that sense that this is about fostering a culture over time and that this requires participation between leaders within churches as well as the people. It's neither one nor the other that can make that happen. There's a time-tested saying, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And so this is not a matter of just saying, hey, like if we just figure out this strategy, we can have churches of goodness. Rather, it's fostering that culture over extended periods of time, you know, the small decisions as well as the big decision points that lay that groundwork. Yeah. So as you read through this chapter 8, was there any one particular point, theme, piece that the Holy Spirit highlighted for you that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah. So to be honest, I got to go to Fred Rogers, and I started reading that. Yeah. You know, I started chuckling, and I'm thinking back, you know, what was the line? It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm, I think that's, I remember watching Mr. Rogers as a kid and certainly as a child didn't know anything of the Fred Rogers, the actor, the person behind Mr. Rogers, but, definitely those childhood minutes, memories. And so it was fun for me to read a bit about Fred Rogers. And but I think the Holy Spirit piece for me was that it pointed it right back to me. And so they're talking about how he, you know, just constantly lived the philosophy, the convictions that he taught and modeled in the TV show, and walking through his life. And I love, like, they write, he simply put Tove into practice and stubbornly, consistently stayed with it. And Tove always takes root first in the hearts of individuals who then work together with like-minded others to create that goodness culture. And so it just reminded me of that called me first.
Yeah.
You know, how am I shaping the daily rhythms of my life, my choices and my priorities? You know, that urgency versus important, you know, how am I spending my days relating to, you know, my family or others around me? You know, how am I cultivating Christ's character in my life? Like it really has to start there.
Yeah.
And so I found myself going from chuckling about Mr. Rogers to like, oh yeah, like, am I shaping and cultivating this tov, you know, God's goodness in my own life,
mm-hmm.
And in my own character, because that's where it's yeah. going to start.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a quote actually I'd like to share here from the book. Scott McKnight, he writes, Fred's prayer in those early morning sessions were not for success or for accomplishment, but rather for the goodness of heart to be the best person he could be in each of the counters that he would have that day. How often are my prayers, my calling on God's presence and activity rooted in my desire for success or accomplishment? And then this fellow named Maxwell King goes on to say, Fred Rogers never, ever let the urgency of work or life impede his focus on what he saw as basic human values, integrity, respect, responsibility, fairness, and compassion, and kindness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I see in here, and you're inviting us to, like, how do we as leaders kind of live into this? But this, like, and McKnight highlights it, McKnight and Berenger, of this idea that we need to focus on people rather than institutions. And so often it's easy to kind of place people, ourselves and those that we lead, as subservient to the institution rather than the institution serving the person. So you talked a little bit about, you know, institution creep. Mm-hmm. And so that would be my next question for you, Michelle. Like, where have you observed institution creep, whether, you know, locally in your context, other contexts, yeah, more broadly in the Church of Jesus, this institution creep where that becomes the driving force, everything subservient to the organization?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I've been reflecting on this since I read the chapter. And it's, you know, interesting when I think of my role as board chair and a lot of the governance work and, you know, even the work I do with bylaws. And I remember mm-hmm. several years ago when I started getting involved with some of, like, the bylaws or the governance work of the work we do as a governance board, and I really had to wrestle and pray through that, because I was like, you know, I could see that I had the ability and capacity to work with stuff like bylaws and understand and engage, but I was like, okay, like, what's the purpose in this? Like, if I'm going to spend all this time and energy in this, there has to be a reason beyond, well, we just need this legal thing done, right? Like, if it's just to rubber stamp something or check off a box, like, no, thank you. There's a better place to put my time and energy. And so I spent a lot of time praying through, like, hey, God, like give me your vision and purpose mm-hmm. for that here. And I think that's continued to be my prayer over the years. I know that's a bit of a distraction from your question, but just to say, like, it's and I get a bit of a reputation of loving bylaws, and I think God's given me a deep appreciation for their value and purpose. But that's come through a lot of prayer and wrestling through some of this. But yeah, institutional creep comes in. So,
well, let me jump in that territory, Michelle. Let me say that those of us who don't love bylaws find great joy in making fun of the people who do. But let it not be missed that we are exceedingly grateful for those of you who love bylaws.
Well, thank you. The institutional creep.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna take this a bit of a different direction.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I've been thinking a lot about it, and I actually think that institutional creep comes in when we start to lead and function out of our brokenness.
Mm.
And so to unpack that, mm-hmm. you know, if we look at their circle of tov, and so far at this stage in the book, you know, we've looked at empathy, grace, and now putting people first, and, you know, the opposite of that, the narcissist culture, like, you know, power and fear and then institutional creep. And I think, you know what, unfortunately, any institution is filled with people, and this side of heaven, that's going to be broken people who are still working at our sin and our transformation, you know, in Jesus. And so institutions aren't necessarily bad in and of themselves, but they're yes. a function of the people leading and serving and engaged in them. And so when we lead out of our brokenness, and so we allow insecurities to allow fear creep in, and an institution becomes shaped around preserving power or authority or you know, focused on rules or functioning around fear, then I think we allow that to creep in and shape it. I don't know if that makes sense or not. I've been giving this a lot of thought.
Yeah. No, that makes a ton of sense, Michelle. So like with, you know, that idea of leading out of our brokenness, kind of leading to or being a foundation for institution creep or just abuse of power. So what would your advice be to leaders to ensure, or I guess we can never ensure it, to become healthier, more rooted in our identity in Christ, so that we're not, our brokenness is not on the leading edge of our leadership?
Yeah.
What's your advice?
Yeah. What's my advice? You know, as leaders, we have to do that self-leadership work. And that can look a lot of different ways, a lot of different resources. But we need to do that. And we need to do that in relationship with others that are speaking into our lives. You know, like in 13 years of church ministry, you know, I can track a lot of my own growth, a lot of my own brokenness. I can see seasons where I was leading out of brokenness or fear or insecurity and the impact of that on me or my ministry or people around me, and seasons where I've allowed God's healing and renewal in my life, and now how that has, you know, then shaped me and what I do and how I'm engaged with the people around me. And I don't have one particular formula for that, but that humility and openness to the voices around us, mm-hmm. and the voices that are easy to hear from and the voices that aren't, right?
Yeah.
And you know, I think if you're constantly surrounded by people that are agreeing with you or affirming you, like that's probably a bit of a red flag that there's some relationships or conversations you're missing out on. And like we're all on this journey. You know, my sister got Adam a mug a number of years ago, and it says somewhere between raising hell and amazing grace. And I think it's very in keeping with my sister and brother-in-law's humor. but I also think of I have this artwork. I think it's still in my childhood room, but it was in my room growing up. And it's got a little girl on it. It's a cross stitch, but it says, "Please be patient. God isn't finished with me yet."
Yeah.
And I think like that's the journey for all of us. And so if we can live freely and lightly in that, and allow Jesus to be continuing to do His work in us, and be open and vulnerable about that, and be sharing our story and inviting others in and encouraging other people in that, and allowing God to speak into our lives and through Scripture and through the Spirit and through people He places around us, and then if we can be doing that in community together, at least we're setting ourselves up and creating a culture and space where, you know, hopefully then, like as a community, whether it's a board or a ministry team or a staff team or a full congregation or conference, you know, if we're doing that together, then hopefully we're setting ourselves up to be more soft and prompt to hear the conviction of the Spirit.
Yeah. No, that's good. I like how you phrase it right at the start, that idea of leading ourselves first. That makes a ton of sense. You've kind of spoken to that on an individual level. Thinking more broadly, looking at the church, within a church system, what do you think are the barriers to having a people first culture? What are the pieces that get in the way of that? Mm-hmm. Beyond our, obviously you've spoken to that within ourselves and leading from our brokenness, but then more broadly than that.
Yeah, it's going to be a mix of things, you know. So there's the people piece, and then with institutions, like we have to wrestle with both the opportunities and limitations with any set of like structure or policy or and so one very simple example here at WMB, when we have opportunities to, you know, participate in something, whether it's an event or a discipleship course or an opportunity to serve and be involved, we often cast that general invitation. You know, if this would interest you, you're invited to be a part of it. And for a number of years, a big part of my role was working with our refugee ministry. Mm-hmm. And so getting to know and working with a lot of people who were new to Canada, and so new to Canadian culture and Canadian church culture. And one thing I realized was that for a lot of our newcomers, they weren't sure that this open invitation was for them. Mm-hmm. And interesting.
Yeah.
And the last thing, someone who's, you know, grateful to be welcomed in to a new church who's new to Canada, last thing they want to do is, you know, over a third or disrespect us by stepping into a place that they're not really welcomed mm-hmm. or invited. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a while, right? Where you see like, okay, we're casting these invitations and, you know, like, are you looking at who's a part of it, who's not? And when someone's not a part of it, you know, are you digging into the work of why not? You know, what's the barrier there? And then if you can understand the barrier, are we able to do something? You know, and are we willing to do something, right? Because I, you know, like, so on a simple level, yeah, like in an institution piece that to the majority of us seemed fine was a barrier to others. So are we able to shift what we're doing so that we can engage people? Similar example, if I go to like a national level, I think one great example of this I've seen is with our national credentialing process. And I know on Connie's episode with you on the podcast, you guys talked about credentialing and, you know, credentialing as a piece that helps resist a toxic culture. And so I don't want to repeat all of that. And if you missed that, you know, go hear what Connie had to say about our credentialing. But one beautiful thing in our, you know, broader national MB conference, and it's something we have happening right here in Ontario too, which is beautiful, is that we've had missionaries who have been raising up pastors who are planting churches among our First Nations communities. And so we have First Nation churches with First Nation leaders and leaders who should be recognized and identified as pastors. And yet leaders for whom our existing credentialing process produced a number of barriers. And so I just deeply appreciated how our National Faith and Life team walked through that and took our process and adapted a model that would provide a way for our First Nations leaders to go through that process and become credentialed Mennonite Brethren pastors. And I think it was 2 years ago when we credentialed our, mm-hmm. our first First Nations pastors here in Ontario, which was such a beautiful thing. And so I think that's a great example of, again, like being in spaces where we'll hear from people who can identify the barriers that exist in an institution, and then being willing to be flexible and adaptive and find a way through. And so the answer wasn't to throw out the credentialing process or to waive it for some but not others, but the answer was to be flexible and find a way to make mm-hmm. this accessible to all. And so, like, that's another beautiful example to me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so we call that our mentor-based credentialing mm-hmm. System. And that is available for, First Nations leaders, as well as we're also exploring other contexts in which we will have church leaders seeking credentialing for whom kind of the traditional process isn't the best fit. So I love it that you're highlighting.
And again, like I love that, right? So you develop something for one group and then, you know, again, like feedback, hey, like this could be really helpful for others. And so, yeah, I know that our, you know, we're expanding it and making it a more general mentor-based and that is awesome. I love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the pieces before I want to highlight from this chapter, before I pose my next question to you, Michelle, is this idea that in this chapter, McKnight and Berenger really, really push us to view one another, you know, as an extension of, you know, seeing the God-given dignity in each person, viewing everyone as an image bearer of God. And as a result of that, engaging with one another within our church cultures as siblings. There is a temptation, a pull. I know that we've spoken to it in a couple of the other conversations in this series, but the temptation for us as leaders to use people as pawns for what we want to see accomplished, and his call to view one another as siblings. And then in the chapter, they point out from 2 Corinthians 2, where Paul is in Troas to preach, and Titus had not yet arrived. And so Paul leaves. And a lady named Paula Gooder comments on this, saying, "Paul, the greatest evangelist of all time, passed up the opportunity to preach the gospel because his friend Titus was not there." And just this sense of, because he valued that relationship so deeply and was so dependent on kind of that support and presence of Titus, Paul stepped away from an opportunity for supposed success or accomplishment. There's a lot more we could mine into that a lot deeper, but just that suggestion of viewing one another as siblings. And so I ask you, Michelle, how have you, in your years of life in the church, how have you experienced a people-first culture? You know, you shared an instance that you've observed, maybe kind of a little bit secondhand. Like, how have you personally been on the receiving end of a people-first culture, whether that be at WMB or another church setting?
Yeah. I'll go back to some of my early ministry experiences. Long before WMB, when I was a young adult and I was in seminary, and I worked as an intern for a couple years with Philip Cerez, mm-hmm. Now it's known as Multiply. At the time that I was working with him, we were still YMI, Youth Mission International, mm-hmm. and then from there becoming MBMSI. I don't even remember what Mennonite Brethren Mission and Service International.
Yep.
and then MB Mission. And so that's the time that I was a part of it. And we were a small team in the Waterloo office here in town. And I had known Philip and Robin a little bit before having this opportunity to work with Philip. But I mean, if you know Philip and Robin, you know, they're people persons. They love, they're passionate about what they do, about people, about Jesus, and it just pours out of them constantly. And so I'd find myself in the office with Philip, and never treated as a coworker or an intern, but as like a sister in faith. And I remember him, he was determined to convert me to coffee, and he'd show up with Starbucks coffee for me, which ironically, I couldn't do at the time, and now I'm totally hooked. So I guess he won in the end. But you know, I just found like we'd be together, and he was constantly inviting me in and to process things with him, seeking my perspective on stuff. And at times, like I was, you know, 23 at the time when I started with him. So like I'm just a kid. I'm totally new, and yet like you're interested in my opinion or my perspective, like. It just seems so crazy to me. And you know, and interested in me as a person, and you know, praying for me, caring for me. You know, Philip and Robin journeyed with me through my marriage and becoming a stepmom, and mm-hmm. So many significant parts of life. And so I was never just an intern, but you know, I was a sister and a family member to Philip and to Robin. And so that was just really beautiful, my experiences with Philip, and something that I've sought to, you know, carry into my leadership too. And, you know, when I'm working with teams you know, kind of like this chapter says, right? For me, like my ministry teams and leaders, they're brothers and sisters first.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, often, you know, when I see them, we're not first looking at tasks, but how are you? How is your family, right? How can we be praying for
right. Yeah.
each other? And you know, one hard thing for me as my role has shifted over the years, and the people within our church that I work most closely with shift. And that's been a challenge for me, because I have seasons and I form a deep relationship with someone, and then we shift into different areas and we cross paths. And ideally I would just spend all my time, you know, connecting and praying, and like I want to keep all of these relationships going. And that's been a challenge for me. And sometimes I have to trust as I release things for God, and also trust when he opens doors to keep those going.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. So we've touched base on our credentialing process and how that can be one way that we can foster a people-first culture. We've talked about the mentor-based credentialing. Do you have any other insight in terms of how we maybe currently are, or we could proceed to, just more deeply foster this culture among our pastors? How can we, you know, encourage and bless them, support them in becoming a people who, as an expression of Tov, value people first?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll share another story for me that a couple brief moments that really significantly impacted me. And as you know, in our MB conference and at the national level, we've gone through a governance model shift to something called the collaborative model. And so high level institution, mm-hmm. We're talking about here. But as we were going through the process of making decisions about that, as a national conference, I had a couple of opportunities at national gatherings to be in conversation with two different of our key leaders who were leading our national family in this. In each of these, they were just small, private conversations. But in each of these instances, the question came up of like, oh, what if the collaborative model doesn't pass? What if it doesn't get voted in? And each of these two leaders, their response was, that's okay. It's not my role to push something through. We're here to empower and equip our delegates to make a good decision. And then we leave the decision up to them and we honor what decision they make. I'm not quoting verbatim, but that was the essence of what they said. And I was just so like profoundly moved by that, because this is coming from leaders who at that point had spent years invested in mm-hmm. researching and developing and bringing this model to our conference and engaging in conversations all across Canada. And so something they were highly invested in, and highly invested in because they believed that it was the best next step for us.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in the end, they weren't there to push a decision through, but to set us up to make that decision together and then to honor the decision that was made. And so for me, like I was just so moved in each of those moments, like to see that posture and that open-handedness to God and to others from leaders in those roles. And, you know, so for me as a board chair, you know, that stuck with me, and especially over this past year as I came into this role as chair and as we had to navigate some really complex and tough decisions as like an Ontario Conference of Churches, you know, that had been my prayer. And as approaching convention and leading through convention, hey God, like would you equip me to lead well so that I can encourage our leaders, our delegates, like to make decisions well and to do it in a way that honors and glorifies you.
Yeah.
And I think like at the very beginning of this chapter, they say a people first church will treat people with the highest degree of dignity, respect, and integrity. And I think that's what I saw in these leaders, in those conversations. You know, we're leading in tough times. As culture and society shifts around us, there's a lot of cultural pressures on us as the church here in Canada. And I don't think it's going to get any easier anytime soon. If anything, the opposite. There's complex things that we're wrestling with as Christians and figuring out how to live biblically faithful to honor and glorify Jesus in our world today. And we're not always going to disagree because they're rarely black and white, simple, straightforward questions. So how are we creating spaces that bring dignity and respect and integrity as we wrestle through stuff together? You know, how are we as conference leaders creating space with our leaders, right? Every time we gather, and I love like we've got our team of teams, our regional gatherings coming up. Like I think those face-to-face times are so crucial for us as a community of leaders across our province to be in relationship and to be intentional in that so that we can encourage one another. We can hear from each other. We can hear from our churches through each other, and then be encouraging and fostering these spaces so that our leaders can take this back to their churches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that, Michelle. I'm so glad that you shared that example. Yeah, I know what it's like as a leader to be in a space where, yeah, you've poured yourself into something and you're deeply invested in its, you know, its success. And then that speaks volumes in terms of that posture to kind of hand it over and rather than, yeah, forcing it through, doing whatever you can to make it happen, actually, yeah, granting dignity to the people with whom that decision is entrusted. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's good stuff. Yeah, so I guess my last, for kind of the closing two questions, but my last piece would just be, what would be your one kind of snippet, your summary statement of advice to a pastor who says, I want to lead in a Tov way. I want to put people first. What is your one snippet of advice?
Never good at the one snippet thing.
Three snippets is fine.
Three snippets. You know, I think I would say, like, okay, start with your own life, and not even just your own ministry, but your own life. Like, what are your strengths and your challenges in your own life and living like this Tov goodness in all that you do? And I think if we're honest, we're going to each recognize hopefully areas where it comes naturally and areas mm-hmm. where it doesn't.
Yeah.
And where we need, you know, God's continued work in us.
Mm-hmm.
And then who is the circle around you that's mm-hmm. speaking into you and all you do, and the circle within your church of staff and leaders, board members, lay leaders, you know, friends or confidants and those outside of the church. Do you have a good mix and variety of voices that you're comfortable to hear from? And do you have a team that's passionate about this too, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, start to do the work of looking at the culture of your church. And I think, you know, like that's one reality. Like, this goodness culture has to be owned by all people. And so a pastor can be there and say, I want this for my church. But if the church doesn't want that, the pastor's not going to make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, as leaders, yes, we have significant opportunity and influence, but there's only so much we can do. It's got to come from everybody together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we like, I think a lot of us like to default to programs and systems. There's a lot of appeal to an easy or clear black and white pathway to make something happen. But that's not culture formation, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So what would your number one resource be that you recommend, whether that be, you know, a podcast, a book, a social media follow? What's your recommended resource to help us continue to grow in this territory?
You know, I think of, on the topic of like people first culture and how do we live into this Tov vision, you know, another great Scott Midnight book, he's got a commentary on the Sermon on the Mount, and it's called The Story of God. It's something I read through the summer because our preaching team is preaching from the Sermon on the Mount this fall. And I think there's so much of how Scott unpacks understanding Jesus' teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, especially in the context of his first century audience and the context of Scripture, and then how do we live that out today? And so if you want the meat of what this Tov culture looks like, I would definitely point you to that book. I think another one, I think a friend of Scott McKnight, David Fitch, Church of Us versus Them. We did a mini equip as a national conference a couple years ago. And David does a great job, I'd say, you know, of really unpacking, I think how toxic cultures can form within organizations, including churches. He's got this whole thing, the enemy making machine and getting caught up in banners. And that won't mean anything if you haven't read the book. So if you're curious, go read the book. But I think for me, I found that really helpful to be aware of some of those toxic patterns that can creep in without my realizing. And so I think that's a good resource. In terms of self-leadership, honestly, I don't have one. Some authors that I found super helpful in my life, Samuel Rima, David Benner, Parker Palmer, Ruth Haley Barden. If you're curious about specific books, just send me a note and I'll pass them on. And more recently, Rob Reimer. We've gone through the soul care stuff and I'm working on a couple of his books now, the River Dwellers, Life in the Spirit book and Spiritual Authority. But any of these authors, really great. It's that self-leadership, growing in awareness, allowing God to bring stuff to the surface and bring mm-hmm. that healing and renewal. We all need that. And yeah. there's tons of great stuff out there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, super mm-hmm. good. And so that was the Story of God Bible Commentary on the Sermon on Mount, Sermon yes. on the Mount by Scott McKnight, Church of Us versus Them by David Fitch, Soul Care and River Dwellers by Rob Reimer.
Rob.
We'll toss the links into the show notes for those. And then the other ones that Michelle quickly rattled off there, if you're curious and didn't catch them, please reach out to myself or her and we'll make sure we get that that list to you as well. So that's great. I got to read that McKnight book. Big McKnight fan. Have not read that one. So that will be helpful. In closing, Michelle, well, first just to say thank you so much for the time that you've spent here. And I really appreciate that you brought kind of a different angle to this conversation in terms of a number of the different points you spoke to and examples are coming from like a higher level organizational leadership place. Working with church bylaws, working, you know, some of your experiences, say, with the executive board for the Canadian Conference of MB Churches and your experiences in that realm, which is great. I don't think we've had anyone speaking from that angle. And, well, you know, that just speaks to an area of leadership that God has gifted you in and made you passionate about, too. So thanks for blessing us in that way and actually expanding our conversation a little bit.
Yeah, you're welcome. And, I mean, I think it's an arena that I like to think in, but I also think like it can be easy to swing the pendulum so far mm-hmm. and to look at here's something like institutional creep and being caught up in structures that hurt or compromise people and say, well, let's just do away with the institution.
Yeah, yeah. And let's not do that.
No. And we hear some of that today, right? I hear from people, why can't we just do away with the institutional church and be like it was in the early church? And I'm like, okay, well, first of all, like if you really unpack what's happening in scripture, like there's institutional structure there, there's authority and leadership. And so it's not about getting rid of the institutional church.
That's right.
But it's mm-hmm. about allowing God's redemptive work and his goodness to touch every level so that like every part of the institution from every person, you know, that walks through the church doors on a Sunday morning to the pastors and leaders and conference leaders and boards are all living into this goodness culture together. Yeah. And you can do that very well, I think, in any church or any community, no matter how simple or how broad and complex. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. Hear. That's helpful. So may it be heard loud and clear that as we talk about a people first culture, as we talk about institution creep, that is not the case that institutions are bad. Rather, it's when people are in service to the institution rather than the institution in service to the people. And so, I know it's Michelle's hope and prayer, definitely my hope and prayer that what you have heard in this conversation, what this leads you to reflect and pray on will be fruitful in you and whatever organization, whatever people group that you lead and serve with in fostering a people-first culture so that the fullness of God's tov, God's goodness will be present. Michelle, thanks so much. So grateful for the work that you have done with ONMB and the board, as well as seeing what you're leading in at WMB. It's my hope and prayer that we will have many more female leaders in the years ahead that will have the influence and leadership opportunity that you've had. So if there are any aspiring female leaders listening in on this podcast, Michelle would be a tremendous person for you to talk to. I would love to arrange that if you need to talk to Michelle. Super grateful for you, Michelle.
Thanks again for listening to Jesus Stories. It's my hope that this conversation has offered hope for your road ahead, for your journey with Jesus, wherever he leads you. Be sure to catch the next episode and the one after that by subscribing to Jesus Stories wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you've appreciated this, please help us spread the word, sharing the episode however that makes sense to you, via social media, shooting someone the link, or by word of mouth. To track with the MB family here in Ontario, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at ONMB Events. And I also invite you to follow myself as I serve as the ONMB Ministry Director at Ryan_ONMB. For more information, you can also check out our website, www.onmb.org. And last, if you have a Jesus story that you think I ought to feature on the podcast, please pass that along. You can email it to me at rjantzi@onmb.org. Thanks again for joining me today. Have a great day, and I encourage you to keep your eyes out for Jesus stories around you, because God is up to all kinds of great stuff.